Shvias Perek Dalet Mishnah Aleph 4:1. The Mishnah moves on from discussing collecting stones and dirt from one's field, and now we discuss collecting firewood and grasses for feeding one's animals. The Mishnah says, Barishona, originally, Hayu Omrim, they, the rabbis, used to say, Malaket Adam Eitzim Va'avanim Va'asavim, a person is permitted to collect wood and stones, if that's in the Girsa, if that's the proper version of the text, Va'asavim and grasses, Metoch Shalo, Kederach Shu Malaket, Metoch Shal Chaveru. He can collect from his own property just as he collects from his friend's property. Et hagas hagas. On his own property, he can collect the large ones. The large pieces of wood is firewood. The large bits of grasses for feeding the animals. And just leave the small bits behind. By leaving the small bits behind, it's clear he's not clearing the field totally for planting. And he gets the benefit of having his firewood, etc. for use on his own property. However, just to clarify. On his neighbor's property, as we said before, a person can collect anything, large and small. But on his own property, the original version of the law was one could collect just the large and leave the small pieces behind. That would be sufficient to indicate he's not collecting for the sake of preparing to plant. Mishurabu Ovrei Avera, however, once the numbers of people who were transgressing the halachas of Shvias multiplied, Hiskinu, the rabbis made a tekana, that two neighbors, Reuven and Shimon, Reuven could collect the firewood and grasses and perhaps stones, if that's the girsa, in Shimon's field, and Shimon could collect the firewood, etc., in Reuven's field, but not their own field. And not only that, but Shelo Batova. When Reuven collects the firewood from Shimon's field, Reuven may not even express thanks to Shimon for having allowed him to go into his field. For Shimon having allowed Reuven to go into Shimon's field to collect the firewood and grass, etc. Vein Sarach Lomar, and it goes without saying, Shiaketz Lahem Mazonos, that Shimon can't provide some food stipend to Reuven for collecting the grasses or stones or wood off of his field. Because, of course, in the time of the Mishnah, the economy was still largely a barter economy. And that's how you would actually pay people, by giving them food. So obviously you can't hire a person to clear off your field. That would undermine the whole point. The point is you're collecting for the sake of firewood and animal fodder and not clearing away the field so it can be planted. So you certainly can't hire someone else to do that work for you. So that's how the halacha now stands, that after this Mishnah and after the time that this Mishnah was set up in this Takana, one cannot collect firewood or grasses off of his own property, only off his neighbor's property, and the neighbor can collect off of his. The Mishnah is not coming to permit you to steal your neighbor's stuff. That's not the point. The food on the Shemitah year is hefker, but the firewood certainly isn't, and one can't go and take firewood from his neighbor without permission. But the point is, I guess, they would set up a society where Reuven allows Shimon to collect firewood because Reuven and Shimon both need firewood, and if Reuven lets Shimon go to his field, then Shimon will let Reuven collect from his field. As far as the Avanim goes, the Bartanura seems to not have that at the Girsa, meaning there's no mention in the Bartanura's explanation here of allowing or talking about the collecting of stones. That would be relegated to the previous Perek. But even if the Girsa is correct, as we have it in front of us, and the original rule was that Eitzim Va'avanim Va'asavim, not just wood and grasses, but all the stones could be collected from one's own field. That was prior to the Gezerah, and after the Gezerah, the rules, as we saw them in the previous few Mishnayos of the last Perek are in effect. Shvias Perek Dalid Mishnah Base 4:2. Sada Shnis Kavtza Tizra B'motzi Shvias. If one illegally collected the thorns that had been detached from the ground to clear away from his field so he could plant better come Motzi Shvias in the eighth year, that would be against the rules. One may not do that, but if he did, we do not penalize him, and he still, despite the fact that he removed the detached thorns from the field in the seventh year, contributing to the halacha, he still is allowed to plant in the eighth year. The word niskavtza from the word kotz. Kotz is a thorn. So niskavtza, he dethorned his field. That's where there is no kanas, no penalty. However, shinistavia, if he plowed the field well. O shinidaira, or he penned up the animals in a way that they make manure in the normal way, as opposed to how it was stipulated in the previous parak about how to section them off and, you know, the rules that applied over there. So these two violations of the halachas of Shemitah, excessive plowing, as I'll explain in a second, and letting the animals do their business to fertilize the field, are both prohibitions that incur a penalty, lo sizra b'motzi shvias. Even in the eighth year, said the rabbis, one who violated these halachas and plowed illegally, or who penned up the animals to fertilize the land illegally, is penalized and may not plant that field even in the eighth year. Now, as far as the Netivia goes, what we're talking about here is plowing very well, meaning plowing twice. So the context of the Mishnah is that at some time during the Roman occupation of Israel, during the Mishnah period, so the Romans imposed like a land tax, and all land had to produce a fixed amount of wheat to provide as like a tax to the government. So if the Jews would not plant any wheat in the Shemitah year, they wouldn't have any wheat at all, and they couldn't meet the tax requirements, and that could have dire consequences, and it was sakanas tefashas, so it was a risk to their lives. And that being the case, the rabbis were lenient and said, listen, since it's a risk to life, we have no choice but to permit people to work their fields in the Shemitah year, to the extent that they'll be able to generate the grain to meet the tax requirements. But more than that, Jews are not allowed to do. And that being the case, if a person plowed his field not once but twice, since a single plowing would be sufficient to get enough grain to meet the tax requirements, a second plowing of the field would be a total violation of an unjustified violation of Shemitah. And therefore, if a person did that, we'd have the penalty of not being allowed to use the field in the eighth year. The Mishnah now discusses a new point. I'm going to speak it out before I read it inside. The point is, what happens if one plows a field for the benefit of the trees in that field? Meaning, one can't plow, but the plowing here doesn't directly, only indirectly impacts the fruits growing on the trees. Now, the fruits might be bigger and better. Now, the fruits were anyways permissible to eat on Shvias because Shemitah produce, planting is forbidden, but whatever grows naturally is permitted. And trees that grow by themselves and they, you know, last from year to year don't even fall under the prohibition of the Isr Svechen, the prohibition against, the later prohibition, let's say, against eating produce grew naturally that would have to be planted year after year. They made that Isr Svechen to stop people from cheating the system and breaking Shemitah, but it's not applicable to fruit on trees. So the question is, what happens if one plows around his fruit trees, giving some benefit to the fruit, you know, the apples growing on the tree? Does that now make the apples restricted that one could not eat them on Shvias? So Machlokas, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the Machlokas actually is really based on the understanding of the Pasuk. The verse that talks about permitted foods on the Shemitah year is a little ambiguous. It says, this is, I'm reading now from Vayikra Chaf Hei, Pasuk Vav, it's Vayikra 25:6. It says, V'haisa Shabbos Ha'aretz Lachem La'achla. The Shabbos Ha'aretz, the rested land's produce shall be for you to eat. L'chaul Avdecha, for you and your servants, etc. But it's just hard to translate, and the meaning is ambiguous. The question is, does it have to be produce that had no benefits because it rested, or does it mean produce on land that wasn't worked? So we have Machlokas here, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, based on the meaning of that verse. If the prohibition is any land that was worked becomes forbidden to have even the fruits on the trees to be eaten, so then the fruits of the trees would become not allowable to be eaten on the Shemitah year. And that's Beis Shammai Shita, as the Mishnah says, Sadeh Shinistaiva. If you have a field that was plowed, the apple tree on the field, Beis Shammai Omrim, Ein Ochen Peroseh B'Shvias, those apples now cannot be eaten on the Shemitah year, since it's not Shabbos, it didn't have a rest. However, Beis Hillel Omrim Ochen, Beis Hillel say no, one can't work the fields, but the fruit that grows naturally, even on a field that was plowed, is still edible. And we'll learn this simply that we're referring to trees, fruits, since trees were never included in the Isr Svechen. There are those who understand that what the case of the Mishnah is, if you ask the question, how could Beis Hillel permit food that grew on Shemitah year? Because of the Isser Svichin, the prohibition against eating plants grow naturally. So the answer could be that this Mishnah is predating that Gezerah of the Isser Svichin. Either way, that's the Mishnah's case. The Mishnah continues by saying, Beis Shammai Omrim ein ochlin peiro shvius betova. When, in any case, when you go to someone's field, you're allowed to take the fruit and the vegetable, whatever's growing there naturally, in the Shemitah year, to the extent it's permitted to be taken, you can take it, and it's hefker. The question is, are you allowed to even say thank you to the owner of the field? Let's say you walk into the neighbor and you pick a nice apple off his tree, you want to take it home and eat it. Can you say thank you for the apple to the neighbor? So, Beis Shammai says, no, you may not. Ein ochlin peiros shvius betova. You may not even say thank you when you eat the apple in the Shemitah year. The reason why is because it would suggest that the owner of this apple is the landowner. And that's just not true. Hashem was rendered ownerless. He was mafkir all the produce, and therefore you don't say thank you to this person. And by saying thank you to him, it suggests that it actually is not ownerless and hefker. Beis Hillel omrim ochlin betova v'shelo betova. Beis Hillel say it doesn't make a big difference. You can say thank you or not say thank you. It doesn't undermine the fact that everyone knows that the produce is Shemitah produce and is ownerless. And saying thank you is, you know, either not meaningful or suggests, you know, he did other things besides the, you know, he planted the tree, etc. That's the Tanakhama's version of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai's argument. And Rabbi Yehuda omer chilaf hadavarm. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, switch around the names, meaning according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not Beis Shammai, but rather Beis Hillel, who is strict and said, you may not say thank you. And Beis Shammai is lenient and says it doesn't matter whether or not you say thank you. Chilaf hadavarm, switch the words around, says Rabbi Yehuda, and zu mekulei Beis Shammai u'mechumri Beis Hillel. This is one of the rare cases, says Rabbi Yehuda, where Beis Hillel is the strict one and forbids, in this case, forbids say thank you, whereas Beis Shammai is the lenient one and says it doesn't matter if you say thank you or otherwise. The general rule, of course, is that the halacha always follows Beis Hillel, and most of the time, almost all the time, Beis Hillel is a more lenient opinion. But there are certain cases where Beis Hillel is actually the more strict approach. And you can look in Masechet Edius where we have it listed out. So there's a general principle that those rare cases where Beis Hillel is the strict one is enumerated. And here the Mishnah's Rabbi Yehuda is saying that this is indeed belongs on that list of cases where Beis Hillel is the strict one. However, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, the halacha is like the Tanakhama, like Beis Hillel, meaning one can be lenient and say thank you or not say thank you for the fruit, and it doesn't matter, it's still permitted to be eaten. Shvius, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Gimel, 4:3. We had said in the previous Mishnah that there are certain knasot, penalties that go to against a Jew who plowed illegally in the seventh year, and one can't plow that field in the eighth year. And we'll say in this Mishnah that one couldn't rent an illegally plowed field from such a Jew. However, we also say that one may rent a field that was plowed by a non-Jew in the seventh year. And in fact, one can go into contract with a non-Jew in the seventh year saying, you provide me with a plowed field so that in the very commencement of the eighth year, when Shemitah is over, I can hit the ground running and go straight into my my planting, as long as you plow it ahead of time. That's legitimate. And the Mishnah says, therefore, Hochrin nirin min hanochrin b'shvias. A person may rent, Chocher, I'll translate as rent, Chakiri, we'll call it, means tenant farming, but, you know, we'll call it renting. Nirin, a nir is a plowed field, just an unplanted but plowed field. Minanochrim from Gentiles, non-Jews, b'shvius, on the seventh year. So that means in the seventh year, Shemitah year, you go into contract with the Gentile saying, I will rent your field from you come the eighth year. And that's legitimate. And there are different yourselves, nochrim, ovdei kochavim, goyim. It's all the same. There are different versions because of the different censors. But it means any non-Jew. We're not talking here, just to make it perfectly clear, we're not talking about a ger toshav, someone who's allowed to own land in Eretz Yisrael and stay there. We're talking even in ovdei kochavim, even a non-Jew who doesn't observe the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, but he happens to be in Israel, one is allowed to enter such a contract with him. Aval, however, lo mi Yisrael, one may not do that from a Jew. That is to say, you can't stipulate with a Jew, I will rent your field in the eighth year, provided it's plowed. Even if the deal would be the plowing should only happen in the eighth year, still we're afraid he'll plow prematurely in the seventh year. And certainly if the contract would say, I need a plow to fill that is plowed on day one, the eighth year, of course that's forbidden because you're causing the Jew to plow for you in the seventh year, which is forbidden. Further says the Mishnah, Umachazikin yedei nachrim b'shvias. You are allowed to encourage, literally machzik yad means to strengthen the hand. So machzikin yadei nachrim means strengthen the hand of the Gentile. What it means, you can, says the Bar Tanura, you can wish them well. You can say yeshar koach for your hard work. Keep up the good work as they're plowing the fields on the seventh year in Shemitah, because there's no prohibition against a non-Jew plowing his field. And it's good for everybody. It's good that there should be plowed fields and produce, etc. in the fields. So you can encourage the non-Jew of Avlo Yidei Yisrael, but you cannot encourage a Jew to be plowing in the seventh year. That obviously goes without saying because it's forbidden. But the case is even where, like we had said in the previous Mishnah, there were certain times when the Romans imposed taxes, and out of fear of, you know, losing their lives, the Jews were allowed to do plowing and planting in the Shemitah year to provide for the wheat to meet the tax requirements. But if one would see a Jew plowing within the bounds of halacha, he still couldn't encourage that Jew to keep up the good work, because it's not good work. He's plowing on Shemitah, and it's a regrettable situation that he has to do it, and not one that should be encouraged, even if it's a necessary evil. The Mishnah goes on to say something very important. And this, what I'm about to say now, besides being very important, it applies way beyond the scope of Shvius. In general, the halacha is Visholin Bishloman. One may inquire about the well-being. Then you can say, hello, good morning, how are you? To a non-Jew, Mipnei Darchei Shalom, because of the ways of peace. Now, this doesn't mean Mipnei Ha'eva. Doesn't mean because, you know, it does not mean to suggest, you know, Gentiles are bad people or whatever, shouldn't be treated well. It's just that if you don't treat them well, then they'll come back and get you or whatever the story is, so you better be nice. No, that's not what it's saying at all. What it's saying is it's proper and right to greet a non-Jew. Even non-Jews who own land in Israel where they shouldn't be there, because you don't necessarily want Jews who don't observe at least the Shev Mitzvah Noach, the laws that they're expected to observe. Even those Gentiles in the land of Israel, we wouldn't want them there under those circumstances. Still, it's right and proper to inquire of their well-being, and all the more so if a person lives in a Gentile nation and he has a coworker and so on. Obviously, it's the right thing to do to be polite, cordial, and ask of well-being, etc. Because of Darchei Shalom, because that is the proper way of the Torah to promote peace. Now, I want to just make it clear how far this goes, because I think people might underestimate this mandate over here. I'm going to read you the words of the Rambam. The Rambam codifies this halacha in Hilchos Malachim, that's in the last of the 14 books of the Yad HaChazaka, in Shoftim, and in Perek Yud, the 10th chapter of Hilchos Malachim, halacha Yud Beis. At the very end, the Rambam says the following. Afilu hagoyim, even when it comes to non-Jews, tzivu chachamim levaker cholehem, our rabbis commanded us to do bikur cholim, to visit their sick, velikvor meisehem, and to bury their dead in meisei Yisrael, just as one does along with Jews who have died, ulefarnes aniyim bechlal ani Yisrael, and to take care of their poor people along with the poor Jews, mipnei darchei shalom, because that is the way of peace. And that's a proper thing to do. Re ne'emar, look, it says in the Pasuk, Tov Hashem l'chol, Hashem is good l'chol, to everybody. Baracham avol kol ma'asav, God's mercy extends to all of his creations, Jew and non-Jew alike. Ve'ne'emar, and further it says in the Pasuk, Darcheh darcheh noam, the ways of the Torah are pleasant ways, v'chol nisivoseh shalom, and all of its pathways are paths of peace that promote peace. And therefore, it's absolutely the right and proper thing to do to be polite, concerned, and even do chesed by and with non-Jews.
Shvius, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Dalet, 4:4. I'm going to say this Mishnah according to the Bar Tanura first, but because this pshat is quite difficult and the Tos Yom Tov really objects vehemently to it, I'll give it a second explanation according to the Rambam.
The Mishnah says, Hamedel Bezesim, if one is thinning out his olive trees, that is to say, he has trees planted too closely together, and because they're so close, some of the trees are stifling the other trees, so that no tree is growing properly. So in the interest of protecting some trees, one is going to pull some other trees away and get rid of them. In such a case, Beis Shammai says, Yagom. He can't actually rip it out of the ground, taking the roots with it, because that would look like he's working the ground, perhaps. Rather, he just cuts the trees down to be small stumps. Ubeisil omrim yisharesh. Beisil say it's not a problem. He can actually uproot the trees. The word sharesh means root, yisharesh to uproot them. And that's okay. And there's no reason to fear that it looks like he's working the ground. It's evident what he's doing to anybody. Umodim, but both Beisil and Beis Shammai agree, the machalik ad shiagom. If he's not being meidel, ripping out, as we'll see in a moment, one or two trees, but pulling out of the ground three or more trees that are side by side, then he can't take the roots out. He can simply just chop it down to be a small stump, and that's the most he can do, so no one thinks that he is preparing the ground for planting or working the ground. Ezuhu meidel, what constitutes the meidel, the thinning out of the trees? That's echro shnaim, one or two trees that are next to each other. Hamachalik, and as far as machalik, clearing out, the word chalak to make smooth, meaning the ground is smooth because there's nothing left there, clearing out a portion of land, that's shlosha ze betzad ze. That would be three trees being removed, one beside the other. B'medavar mamurim, when does this restriction apply? Matoch shalo, in his own fields. In his own fields, Beis Hillel rules, if you're taking one or two trees, you can be misharesh, you can pull out at the roots. And if you're doing three or more trees side by side, again, all for the sake of thinning out the olive trees, according to the Bartanura, so that the other trees can grow better and survive, then it's restricted as described. However, avo mitoch shel chavero, if one is getting trees out of his neighbor's property, again, we're not assuming that it's just a free-for-all. Even in Shemitah year, you can't just take your neighbor's trees. It doesn't belong to you. The fruit of the trees may be hefka, but the trees themselves belong to the neighbor. But assuming the neighbor lets you, for whatever reason, take his tree, so then, afa machlik yisharesh, then even if you're pulling out three or more trees from the ground, you can pull them out with the roots, and that's no problem. That's the pshat, according to the Bartanura. The problem is, as we know, one of the four explicit prohibitions on Shemitah is pruning, and the point of pruning is cutting away some branches, so that other branches will grow more fully and the fruit will be more, robust. And it's very difficult to understand the difference between the prohibition of chopping off individual branches and now chopping off entire trees for the sake of other trees. And therefore, the Tos Yomtov says that the pshat must be like the Rambam. And the Rambam's understanding is that one isn't thinning out the trees, one for the benefit, removing some for the benefit of others, but rather one is simply taking some of the trees for the sake of firewood. He needs wood for burning, and therefore he's taking these trees, and that's not prohibited at all, provided he's not doing it for the sake of, working the ground at all. He's simply just taking wood. And again, we're not discussing considerations regarding the prohibition from the Torah of baltashchis, of destroying fruit trees. Assume that the case is one where it's permitted to remove the fruit tree, which would be the case if the wood, for example, is worth more than the fruit that it produces, etc. In any case, and therefore the Rambam learns the way to read this Mishnah is, Hamedel Bezesim, if one is removing trees for firewood, Beis Shammai Omrim Yagom, then he has to just chop it at the base, but not pull out the roots, so it shouldn't look like it's working the ground when he takes that tree. Beis Hillel Omrim Yisharesh, it's not a problem, he can pull out the roots, even if it's one or two trees, since he's taking it for firewood, nothing to worry about. Omodu B'machalik Ad Shiagom, and they all agree, meaning Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai both agree, that if you're pulling out three trees side by side, then you have to do the roots in and just cut it down, even if it's for firewood, but not for pruning at all. The Mishnah says, Ezu Medel, what constitutes Medel, what defines Medel, Echad Hashnayim, that's one or two trees, Hamachalik, and clearing out an area, making it smooth, that's Shlosha, three trees, Zeh Betzad Zeh, one beside the other, three in a row. B'medavar Murim, when it's a restriction on getting firewood, and that you have to leave roots in the ground if there are three or more, that's according to base. Hillel, as the Rambam understands it, that's metoch shalo, only in your own property. Avo metoch shel chavero, if you're getting firewood from trees in your neighbor's property, Afa machalik yisharesh. There's no problem, even if you're taking three trees side by side, you can pull the trees out for firewood, including their roots. That's a Rambam's shot. Yes, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hay, 4-5. We continue with the chopping down of olive trees. The Mishnah says, Hamavakia bezayas. If one is chopping an olive tree, the word bokeh is to chop. Mavakia means to call to be chopped. It's a strange choice of words. The Rambam speaks out, it means that one is chopping off branches of the olive tree to get firewood. In such a case, lo yechapeo ba'afar, you can't cover the place where you chopped off the limb of the tree with afar, with dirt, because that will end up making like a clay covering, which would facilitate new growth on the tree, which one can't do on Shemitah. Avam mechasahu ba'avanim o bakash, but you could cover the place where the chop happened with stones or with straw. Here, that would just prevent drying out of the place where you cut the tree, or prevent, you know, infestation of some kind. And that being the case, you're not facilitating the growth of the tree, but just protecting the tree, which is permitted on Shvius. There, if you could cover with those stones or straw, as the case may be. And similarly, hakotetz koros shikma. If you're chopping off limbs off of a shikma tree, the art scroll translates shikma as sycamore. The Rambam says it's a kind of fig tree. I'm not sure exactly. What's clear is that the shikma tree was used in the time of Chazal for timber. And the way that it was collected was that, and cultivated, was that one would cut a shikma tree, the first time, and then that would cause the boughs of the tree to grow back, straight and thick and of high quality for timber purposes, for wood construction, etc. So we've had it a few times already in the Mishnayos. Interestingly, the shikma tree, before it's been cut, is called a basula, like a virgin shikma tree. It's never yet been cut. And after it's been cut for the first time, it's called a korash shikma, which literally means something like beams, like construction beams of a shikma. The word kora is like a beam for timber. And sometimes the word kora refers to the beams of the shikma. They're almost synonymous. Which is fascinating because this seems to be the primary source of timber in the time of Chazal. So the way one does it is he chops the basula shikma the first time, and then it grows back thick and well. So the point is that by chopping the tree for the first time, you're promoting the growth in the tree the way you want it to grow, which is going to be restrictive. So the Mishnah says, Hakotzes koros shikma, if one is chopping the beams, the boughs off of a shikma tree, since it's koros shikma, it's already been cut before, that's okay, just the same as an olive tree, lo yechapeo ba'afar. The place where you chop the tree, you can't cover in afar is dirt, because again, that will facilitate further growth of the tree. Avu mechazu ba'avanim o bakash, but you could cover the place where you chopped with stone or straw, again, to protect the tree. Same exact din as the zayas. We only say that because this is in contrast to ein kotzin basula shikma. If it's korah shikma already previously cut in the past, you can recut, because the second growth isn't especially good relative to the first. But if it's never been cut before and it's a basula shikma, by cutting it now, you're really stimulating its growth, and that's really helping the tree to grow better the next time. And that being the case, it's asr. So ein kotzin basula shikma b'shvias, you can't cut for the first time a shikma tree on the Shemitah year, mipnei shehi avoda, because that is the very way that you promote the growth of the tree to grow properly. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kedarka. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, he limits it to say chopping the tree in general is not necessarily forbidden. It's just forbidden if you do it in the normal way. What is the normal way? Within 10 tefachim of the ground. Then when the trunk grows back long and strong. However, that's when it's aser. Ela o magbia sar tefachim. But if you, says Rabbi Yehuda, chop it at a height above 10 tefachim off the ground, since that's not the normal way to make the shikma tree trunk grow back straight and strong, it's permitted. Or alternatively, ogomem ala arts, or if you chop it very close to the ground, again, chopping the tree all the way down to the ground, is not the normal way of making it grow back long and strong. And that being the case, says Rabbi Yehuda, you could chop it down close to the ground. And the halacha is indeed like Rabbi Yehuda, that you can cut for the first time a shikma tree, provided you don't cut it in the normal way, below 10 tefachim, but not very close to the ground. Shvius, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Vav, 4-6. We're continuing chopping trees for the sake of getting firewood. I'm going to explain this Mishnah according to the Rambam and Tiferes Yisrael, etc., and not according to the Bar Tanura, as the usual policy here, because I just do not understand the Bar Tanura's pshat, and it seems Tosfos Yom Tov doesn't really understand it, at least on face value either. So with that, the Mishnah says, Hamizanev Begefanim. If a person is chopping down branches off of the main, not the main trunk, but branches off the main trunk of a grapevine. Now remember, if you're doing that to promote growth of the vine, that's zemira, that's pruning, and that's an isser from the Torah. But here you're doing it for the sake not of pruning and facilitating growth, but rather just to get firewood, etc. Or ba'kotetz kanim, same goes if you're chopping down reeds. You're harvesting reeds, again, for firewood, etc., but not to promote the growth. So the question is, does one need to do a shinui so it doesn't look like he is pruning, etc.? Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer Yarchik Tefach. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, yes, you need to have a shinui, do it in an unusual way, which means you distance a tefach. So that means if you're harvesting the reeds, instead of cutting them down from the ground all the way to the ground, you cut them a tefach up off the ground. So it's a clear shinui that you're doing it in a different from the usual way. And same goes if you're cutting the branches off the vine, instead of cutting it at the trunk of the grapevine, you distance from the trunk tefach again, so it looks not the usual way, and that's a heker, a distinguishing feature, so one cannot have a problem with maris ayin. Rabbi Kiva, however, disagrees. He's lenient and says kotetz kadarko. You can cut it any way you want, the normal way. No shinui, no unusual activities required. The kardom, you can use a kardom. A kardom, best translated, the truth is a mattock. MATTOCK. Mattock has two sides. It's on a stick, a tool with a metal head that has two sides. One side is an axe, meaning it's got like a vertical blade, like an axe. And the other side has a perpendicular blade. It's called an adze, A-D-Z-E. So that was a chopping tool, if you will. And that's, you could use that as a chopping tool if you want, for chopping down the branch. Oba magal. A magal is a sickle. It's like a curved blade knife. And not to confuse with a scythe, like the Grim Reaper image. The sickle is like the communist flag image, the curved knife. And magera. A magera is a saw. V'chol ma sheyirtzeh, or anything else you want. And Rabbi Kiva says no shinui required. Cut whatever in any normal way. Use whatever you want. Now a new din, like a new paragraph, as if it's a new Mishnah, a new story here. Ilan shenifshach. If you have a tree that's splitting, like the trunk is splitting in half, let's say. So nishfach is a quite unusual word, but it means nistak, to split. So koshno sabishvias, you're allowed to tie it, the splitting tree, on shvias. Lo shi'ale, not to make it grow back together again, because promoting growth would be forbidden on Shemitah. Ela shlo yosif, but you can prevent the split from going further down into the tree. So to stop further damage, one is allowed to do. So that's how the binding of the tree has to be, to prevent further splitting, but not necessarily to make it stick together and grow anew. Shvias, Perek Daled, Mishnah Zayin, 4-7. The Mishnah comes on to a new topic. There's a general principle that one may not waste fruit that is Kedushas Shvias, that has the sanctity of the Shemitah year. That's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says that Hashem gives us the food la'achla, for eating, and that ostensibly superfluous word la'achla, for eating, comes to tell you la'achla, it's a drasha, you're eating it, is permitted, la'lehefse, but you can't waste it, which is why if one's ever experienced Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, you're familiar with how you don't want to leave even one drop of wine at the bottom of the Kiddush cup, etc., if it's Kedushas Shvias, grape juice, etc. So that's the first principle, that one can't waste peroshvius, has to be eaten. There's an additional drasha, which comes to tell you that even if you're going to eat the food, if it's not yet considered to be edible under normal circumstances, even if you eat it, that's a violation of the halachas of Shemitah. So that's a separate drasha. So la'achla v'la'hefsid means that peroshvius can't be wasted, must be eaten. But a second drasha, based on the fact that the Torah uses at the end of the parsha on Shemitah in the Vayikra Chaf Hei Pasuk Zayin, it says Tia
kol tvuasa leachol, all of its produce will be for you to eat. And that extra word, tvuasa, produce is superfluous. It comes to tell you that only once it reaches the stage of something that can be reasonably called produce, that's when you're allowed to eat it. But prior to that, not. So that means if a fruit is too unripe, too early in the stage of its development, even if you eat it, you're in violation of the halachas of Shemitah because it's not yet considered to be tvua. In addition, there's another mention of this word tvuasa later on in Pasuk Yud Beis, and that comes to tell you that there's actually two stages in the ripening process. There are two different lines, thresholds that must be crossed, with two different standards, which we'll see in the Mishnah here. And the next two Mishnahs means there's one standard for eating a small amount out in the fields. Let's say when you're working and you want to eat something, so you eat some fruit. There, the standard is a bit lower, but to bring it home as a harvest, the standard is higher. The two separate cutoffs for when food is considered to be ripe enough, that is considered to be tavua, food that you can eat on Shemitah without violating the halachas of wasting the food. So we're going to discuss in Mishnah Zayin, Ches and Tes, the next three Mishnayos, three special cases. The special case of figs, which haven't ripened fully, and of grapes in Ches that haven't ripened fully, and then olives in Mishnah Tes that haven't ripened fully. In all of these three Mishnayos, we'll also mention another din, a din that's unrelated to Shemitah, a general halacha, a general rule, which is that you can't tithe, take trumas and maestros from fruit if it's not ripe enough. So there's going to be three stages in a fruit's life, if you will, or maybe even four stages in this Mishnah. You have not ripe at all, then you have ripe enough, and then you have fully ripe, if you will. So, meaning gemar malacha, it's finished processing. So when a fruit is not ripe enough, you can't tithe it. Even if you want, if you take maestros from it, it's not effective. Once it reaches that stage, let's call that for now onas maestros, the time when maestros are effective. Although that term is what the exact meaning of that word is debatable, but not for now. So we'll have three stages at least in a fruit's life. Stage one, not ripe at all. At that point, one could never eat shvius fruit, because of lachal hefsed and tua. Then the second stage is, ripe enough, but not fully ripe. And at that stage, one could eat perishvius and one could take maestros, if he wants to. Then there'll be a third stage, fully ripened, at which point, of course, you can eat it in Shemitah. And at that point, the tithing obligation kicks in. It's not optional. It's mandatory. Gemar malacha. Okay. Within that second stage of ripe enough, we will have, I'll call it 2A and 2B, if you will, here in our Mishnah. 2A means ripe enough for eating a little bit in the field, and 2B, ripe enough that you can bring it home reasonably and harvest it in large quantity back to the house. And therefore the Mishnah says, Me'emasai ochlin peirosa ilen b'shvias. From when may one eat not fully ripe fruit from a tree in the Shemitah year and not be in violation of this prohibition against eating unripe and wasting, therefore, the fruit? So the first category is hapagim. A pag in modern Hebrew means a preemie, a child that hasn't fully ripened, so to speak. But in the Mishnah, it refers to either generally unripe fruit or specifically an unripe fig. And here, Rambam speaks out, we're talking dafka only about unripe figs, specifically. Mishi yazrichu, from the point that, according to the Bartanura, they start to get a little bit red. You know, figs start out being totally green. When they start getting some redness to them, that's the earliest time when if you eat that, ochel behem pito basadeh, you can eat them with your bread out in the fields, and that's legitimate, and you're permitted to do it in the Shemitah year. Bichelu, once they reach what we'll call now 2B, you know, ripe enough that they've really begun to ripen in earnest. They're not fully ripe, but they've begun to ripen in earnest. The exact definition of bichelu is not clear. Bartanura, Rambam, those Tver Sirel all give slightly different versions of what it means. Whatever the case is, at that point, called 2B, ripe enough, you can konis lasoch beso, you can bring them, harvest them, and bring them home, and that's acceptable because they're ripe enough to be considered to be food, even if not fully ripe. V'chein k'yotz behem b'shar shnei shvua, that same
threshold of bichelu, when it comes to figs specifically, is enough that in the other years, bishar shnei shavua, in the other years of the seven-year cycle, shavua here, without the hay at the end, is referring to the seven-year Shemitah cycle, not of the week, of course. At that point, chayav b'maisras, they are obliged in maisras, meaning you can take maisras and it's effective, and to the extent that you've done gemar malacha and brought them home, etc. Like getting those halachas which are technical and complicated, at that point, maisras are effective if you take them from the now certainly ripe enough figs.
Shvius Perek Dalet Mishnah Ches 4:8. The Mishnah continues on the heels of the previous Mishnah, saying again there are, it's called, three stages in the life of a fruit, with respect to the halachas of Shemitah as well as the halachas of Maisras. Stage one is when it's not ripe at all, and one may not eat it on Shemitah. And if one does, he's in violation of the requirements said to eat it and not to waste it. And dafka, there has to be tvua, even if you eat it, but it's not yet considered to be tvua and ripe, it's considered to be wasting, not allowed. And then the second stage, stage two, is ripe enough, but not fully ripe. And stage three is fully ripe. Within the stage two of ripe enough, we're going to have what we'll call 2A and 2B. 2A is ripe enough that you can eat it in the field while you're working in small amounts, and that's okay, but not yet bring it in harvest home. And then 2B is ripe enough that you can in fact harvest and bring it home in large quantity, and that's not considered to be wasting the fruit of Shemitah in, you know, as you harvest it. So here in Mishnah Ches is specifically referring to grapes, and it says haboser. A boser is an unripe grape. Mishahavi mayim, once it starts to have some liquid inside of it, some grape juice inside of it, at that point, ochel bo pito besadeh, it's reached stage 2A. It's ripe enough that if you eat it in the field with your bread, so you have something to like sort of accompany your dry bread, that's okay, since it's ripe enough, having have a little bit of moisture, it's not considered to be wasting, and you're allowed to do that in Shemitah. But it's not yet ripe enough to be where you could bring it home. Hivish, once it gets more ripe, hivish means, according to Bar Tanura, that the chartzan, the seed of the grape, now has begun to appear. So it's like begun to ripe. And you can see it, you know, you can see it, the seed through the skin. So it's sort of translucent. At that point, it's reached stage 2B. It's ripe enough that konas lasoch beso, you can harvest these grapes at that stage and bring them home. On Shemitah, it's okay. And then the Mishnah says, v'chein keyotza bo b'shar shnei shavua chai b'maisras. That same stage called hivish, having visible seed from the outside, starting to get, you know, translucent, that's enough that one can take maisras from it, and that's effective in any year besides for the Shemitah year. Of course, there is no tithing of maisras, etc., on the Shemitah year. But other years, that's the stage when one can take maisras and it's effective.
Shvius Perek Dalet Mishnah Tes 4:9. This is the third in the series of three Mishnayos discussing the, I'll call them, three stages of particular fruits with respect to their halachas of Shvius. So we had in Perek Zayin, we talked about unripe figs. In Ches, we talked about unripe grapes. And now in Tes, we talk about unripe olives. And then we will discuss the general rule for other kinds of fruits. The Mishnah says, when it comes to Zaysim, Mishiachnisu Revius Lasa'a, Potseva Ochel Besadeh. When the olive is able to produce one revius of a lug of oil per saw of olives, then one can be potseya. He can crush them like with a rock to make them edible. That apparently makes them more tasty and sweet, edible. Va'ochel besadeh, and then he can eat them out in the field, and that's not considered to be wasting olives when you eat them in the field in that condition. So that's what I'm calling stage 2A, if you know what I mean. So stage 1 is before it can be producing revius of oil. One couldn't eat them then no matter what. Once it at least can produce one revius of oil for a saw of olives, so then one may, at least in the field, eat these olives, and that will be not considered to be wasting as in being hefsid, rather, it's ochel, it's edible, and eating is the case. And these olives in that state already constitute something called tvuasa, it's produce, and not considered to be something you couldn't yet eat on Shvias. And I'm just to translate the words more carefully and explain them. So the first, I'm here talking about stage 2a, if you understand again. So a revius is referring to what we call a revius of a lug, a quarter of a lug. Think of a kiddush cup in the setup I have for the Mishnayos. So we think of a lug as 500 cc. So a quarter of a lug is 125 cc, 125 milliliters. So an asa'a is a six-pack of two-liter bottles. So that would mean, say, 24 liters. So if you, say, for a six-pack of two-liter bottles filled with olives, if you crush those, you could squeeze out of them one kiddush cup's amount, so 125 cc of oil. That's enough of edibility to reach stage 2a that one could eat them in the field. Now we have stage 2b. Hichnisnu chatzi lug. Once they have inside of them a half of a lug, so that's 500 cc, one cup of oil for a saw, for 24 liters worth of olives. So then there's stage 2b, you can be kosesh v'sach v'sadeh. You can not only eat them, but you can even crush those olives and use the oil that comes out of it to anoint your skin. In the time of the Mishnah, it was important for them to keep their otherwise dry, sun-baked hands moisturized, and they use olive oil for that. So there's a special din that sicha kashtia, that anointing one's skin with oil is tantamount to drinking the oil. And therefore, even though the general rule is that the fruit of Shvias is la'ochel for eating and not lahefsed for wasting, anointing one's skin with olive oil is not considered to be wasting it at all. But this is only at stage 2b, meaning at stage 2a, when there's only enough fluid inside of the olives to get one quarter of a lug per sa, so then the quality of that oil is very poor and ineffective for lubricating or, you know, whatever it is, the hands to keep the moisture in. I guess there's not much lipids at that point in the liquid inside of olives. So that would be wasting it at stage 2a. But at stage 2b, the quality of the oil that comes out of pressed olives already is sufficient that it's effective as some kind of emollient or lubricant or whatever, moisturizer. And therefore one can press the olives in the field at that stage and use them on his skin. Now we have in this Mishnah here a stage 2c. So again, stage 2 was when it's ripe enough, if you will. So stage 2c is now, because we had 2b about anointing skin, now 2c becomes hichnisa l'shlish. Once it brings into it a third, then kosesh b'sadeh, you can crush it in the fields and eat it there or use it for oil over there. And also v'chones l'soch b'sa, or you can bring it in large quantity and harvest it at that stage. It's ripe enough, and if you bring it home, it's acceptable to eat in that stage and not considered to be a violation of Shvias. So this is a third stage. Now, what this Hichniso Shlish means, it does not mean once it contains a third of a revius of oil, you can bring it in. That wouldn't make sense. You see, it's not that way from the order of the Mishnayos, because stage 2a was when it has a quarter of a lug. Stage 2b was half of a lug, so a third is less than a half. It's out of order. And that's not the pshat. The pshat is, the bartender gives two possible pshats, and the first is that the olives have reached a third of their total size, if they'd be fully ripened at stage 3. And the other pshat he says is that the olives now contain the third of the oil that they would ultimately be able to produce if they were left to ripen fully. So in other words, what that means is, as a matter of fact, olives today produce something around 20% or so of their volume produces oil. So let's just use that number for argument's sake, 20% to fifth. So that means if you had a six pack of 2 liter bottles, that's a saw. So that's a total of 12 liters. So a fifth of 12 liters is 2.4 liters. So we're saying if that would be hypothetically, if olives would produce, if they were fully ripe, 2.4 liters of oil, we're saying when these olives produce a third of that, meaning 800 cc of oil, at that point, they're considered to be stage 2C. They're ripe enough that you can harvest them and bring them home for consumption. So then the sequence is still increasing order, meaning it's 125 cc is enough to be potseya, to crush them, make them edible in the field and eat them. 250 cc would be enough to use them for anointing your skin. And then, at least in my made up number, but illustrative for the point, at 800 cc, you could now harvest them and bring them in, even though if you left them in the tree longer, you'd actually be able to get at full ripeness a total of 2400 cc. Okay, so anyways, that's the story here of the three stages of ripe enough, 2a, 2b, and 2c when it comes to olives. And then the Mishnah says, as it had in the previous Mishnayos, v'chein keyotze behem b'shar shnei shvua chayavim b'maisras, same idea for the third time, which means, when is the earliest stage one can effectively take maisras, and it counts as maisras, for olives? So the same way we had, the same when it came to figs, we said, when it's ripe enough, call it 2b to bring in, you can also take maisras. And when it came to grapes, we said the same thing. At stage 2b, you can bring them in for shvias, harvest them in large quantity, and you can take the maestros then. And now we're saying the same thing. Olives, when they come to stage, what I called here 2c, ripe enough, you can bring the olives in, and that's the same stage for when they can be tied defectively. And then the Mishnah ends off by saying, v'shar kol peros elan, when it comes to other fruits, any other fruit, like a peach or whatever it is, a carob, whatever the story is. So then, ka'onasan lamaestros, ken onasan l'shvias. It's the same cutoff date, ripe enough. Stage 2 is the same for when it's possible to take maestros legally, effectively, and also when it's possible and permitted to consume these fruits in the Shemitah year, not be considered to be wasting them, being mafs of them, and they're not considered yet to be tevua. So just to speak out one thing, to make sure it's clear, when it came to figs and grapes, there was a stage 2a and 2b, meaning, and same with olives really, that there was two stages. There was the A, when you could eat it in the field, and B, when you could harvest it in. With other fruits, so there is no A and 2a and 2b, there's just simply stage 2, ripe enough. So stage 1, not ripe enough, you can't eat them on shvias, and you can't take maestros. Stage 2, ripe enough, you could eat them on shvias at that stage already, and you could take maestros if you want to at that point. And then stage 3, which is fully ripened, at which point you certainly could eat them on shvias, and at that point you would have to take maestros on them, as et gemar malacha. Shvias perk dalet Mishnah Yud. This Mishnah talks about chopping down fruit trees on shvias. Now, chopping down fruit trees has two separate and unrelated prohibitions. The first, and more familiar to us, is what we refer to as bal tashchis, the Torah and Devarim perk chaf pasuk yud tes says prohibits one from cutting down a fruit tree, and that's the case. Now, there are exceptions or exemptions to that rule of cutting down a fruit tree. As a principle, it means you can't waste resource. And really, many learn, like for example, the Sefer Chinuch, that it's a general principle that applies to culture, to the whole world and anything, that if one wastes, he's over the Isser Doraisa of Baal Tashchis. It's just that you only get lashes min haTorah for cutting down a fruit tree. But any wasting of any resource, you know, walking out of a room and turning the lights on as you walk out, and then the lights blare by themselves, would be Baal Tashchis and Asr. So when it comes to chopping down fruit trees, there are exemptions where one is permitted to chop down the fruit tree. One exemption is if the wood is worth more than the fruit of the tree. Then it's not a hashchas, it's not a waste, because you're extracting more value by taking down the tree and taking its wood as timber than letting the fruits grow. It's not wasting. Similarly, if the cost of maintaining the tree exceeds the output of the tree, so then again, it's not a waste to chop it down because it doesn't produce enough to justify the cost of maintaining it. And then a third exemption would be if one needs the place where the tree is planted, so to remove the tree so you can build a house there, again, it's not bal tashchis, it's not wasting because there's a greater use for that resource, including the space it takes up, than just fruit production. So that's one thing. And the Mishnah will come back to that point at the end of the Mishnah and set up that second exemption, meaning when the cost of maintaining the tree exceeds the output of the tree, one's allowed to chop it down. Before we get to that, the Mishnah will first focus on a separate, totally unrelated issue that arises on Shemitah year, regarding chopping down fruit trees. And here's the problem. If you have a fruit tree that has, it's just, you know, middle of winter and has nothing on it, so then there's no fruit there, and chopping it down has no impact on the prohibition we've been discussing in the past few Mishnayos of La'achla v'la'olahefsed, the fruit that has Kedusha Shvias must be eaten and not wasted. Since there's no fruit in this tree, there's nothing there, it's a barren tree, so chopping it down would not be being mafsid, not being wasting fruit on the tree. However, at some point, the tree is going to begin to grow in the springtime and develop on its way to making fruit, and to chop it down then would be a prohibition in the Shemitah context of hefsed, of wasting fruit that would have been there, it's potential fruit, but it didn't get actualized. If you'd let the fruit to ripen on the tree, then you would have had the fruit to eat, but now you've chopped it off short, and therefore it's hefsed as opposed to achla. So the window that allows you to chop down the tree in the Shemitah year, even if you have one of these exemptions, the window closes once the fruit begins to become something worth talking about. And then at some point, that window will reopen. At some point, the fruit becomes sufficiently edible, what I called stage two in the previous Mishnayos, and ripe enough that at this point, even if one chopped down the tree, what's left on the branches, that fruit is ripe enough and could be eaten as is. And that'll be the onus amaisrus stage we've discussed previously. And it was discussed at great length in the beginning of Maseches Maaseres. So in the context of chopping down fruit trees on Shemitah, even if you have an exemption, which would permit you to chop down a fruit tree in a regular year, in Shemitah you can't if the fruit is going to waste. And this Mishnah will lay out when the window that allows you to chop down the tree, assuming you have an exemption for Hilchos Halachos of Baal Tashchis, of wasting, when that window closes and when it reopens again. So the Mishnah says, Me'emesai ein kotzin esa ilan b'shvias. At what point does the window close and you no longer can chop down a fruit tree on Shemitah because of the prohibition of wasting its fruit? Beishamai omrim kol ha'ilan mishayotzi. Beishamai says, any tree in the springtime when it starts to sprout the foliage, the leaves, at that point already, you can't chop it down. The window's closed. Ubeishil omrim, Beishil says no. Hecharuvin, at least when it comes to carobs, mi yishishel shelu. Once it starts to become like a chain, meaning like the bean of the carob starts to develop and hang down. V'gafanim mishigareu. When it comes to grapevines, when the grapes begin to ripen, tupshat in the bartunera, either it's the point that you can see the seed inside the grape, like I said before, or when it becomes like a little bean the size of a pul halavan, a little white bean, the size of a little white bean. V'hazeisim mishianetu. And for olives, it's when they begin to blossom on the tree, the blossoms of the olive tree begin to appear. Ushar kol ha'ilan, mishayotzi. And for other trees, besides for those three trees, the carob, the grapevine, and the olive tree, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel both agree that it's when they begin to bring forth the foliage, the leaves, in the springtime. V'chol ha'ilan, kivin shebal onus ha'maisris, mutzal l'katzotzo. And now we talk about, that was defining previously when the window closes and one may no longer chop the tree because of being wasting the potential fruit that could have grown there. But now the window reopens at onus amaisris. At that point, since it's like stage two, it's ripe enough and can be eaten as is on Shemitah, at that point you could chop down the tree because whatever fruit is on the tree can be plucked off even after it's chopped down and eaten at that point. Now the Mishnah goes to a new point, the point of when one is allowed to chop down trees in a non-Shemitah year, and we're concerned here about the halachas of Baal Tashchis. So it's a different topic altogether, really. So I said that there are different exemptions when one could chop down fruit trees. The most famous is when the woods are worth more than the tree fruit. Another one is when you need the space where the tree is to build. But this line of the Mishnah will discuss a third exemption, which is when the input costs to keep the tree growing are more than the value of the output. Now, if the output of the tree is no longer significant, one can chop down the tree because the tree is basically at the end of its life and it's over and producing significant fruit worth talking about. The Mishnah therefore says, Kam yehei b'zayas flo yikutzenu? How much does an aged olive tree need to produce to still be considered to be producing too much and therefore you can't chop it down? Rova. The answer is a rova. A rova of a kav, a quarter of a kav, which is about 500 cc. That is as opposed to other fruit trees, where the threshold is a full kav, about 2 liters. By olive trees, it's a rova, a quarter of a kav, because olives are worth more than other fruits. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Hakol Lefi Hazayas. From Shimon Gamliel says, no, everything depends on the particular olive tree we're talking about, and we have to take considerations, specific circumstances about this tree to decide if it's no longer justifies its own existence and can be chopped down. The halach, however, is not like Rishon Gamliel. It's a fixed rova for olives, and for other fruit-bearing trees, it's a full kav.